The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond and greetings and salutations, and welcome once again to IGN's resident PlayStation show. I'm your host, Max Scoville, and I'm joined once again by Jada Griffin.
The evilest gal in the game.
Love it. Brian Altano.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
And Akeem Lawanson. Hey, everybody.
Hey, what's going on? Strangers, how y'all doing?
Stranger. So we're probably going to be talking about Resident Evil some more, as we're prone to here. We're all very excited about it. There's been some new stuff that dropped, namely Mercenaries mode, and of course, hot ticket item, pay to win DLC microtransactions, but we like Mercenaries mode better. We're gonna get into a little bit of that. JD, you played a bunch of Meet Your Maker. But first, there's some nice juicy weird stuff to talk about regarding things that Sony has been patenting. I love this stuff so much. I love it when patents get filed, because it is just it might never happen. You know, it's a bunch of very smart people and important smart scientists in rooms somewhere filled out a bunch of paperwork to say that they had a great idea for something.
I just want to know what the pitch was for this patent.
We actually have a double header here. We have two completely wacky Sony patents that I want to talk about. The first one is a controller that can not only turn hot and cold, but can also be elastically deformed. So basically, it is a controller that has, it would have a sensor that would detect when a player deforms the controller by pressing, twisting, rubbing, crushing, or otherwise wrangling it, I guess.
Yes. I was gonna say it's a bop it. Like,
bop it is coming next.
It's either a bop it or it's made out of like that Nickelodeon slime.
I
was gonna say it's a bop it made of Nickelodeon gack. That's, we're on the exact same page, Jada.
Where's our patent? We should patent that, a bop it made of Nickelodeon gack.
Patents are basically like if you had an idea drunk at 1 o'clock in the morning, but instead of just saying it to the other people in the room, you had to call a law office in Delaware.
It's like if you got a head injury and tried to make an instruction manual for something, and also wrote a term paper that was
Is this like a drawing of like a egg-shaped catcher's mitt?
Yeah, for those of you who are just listening to the audio version, you're not missing much, because this is completely imparsable technical illustrations. It looks like an egg with a small belt loop on it, and then I love that also the patent illustrations frequently have really bad drawings of existing hardware.
Yeah.
This looks like
maybe that's the shape of the controller stretched, or that's the shape of like,
it definitely looks elastically deformed to me.
Yeah, we're looking at two figures right now. Figure three is just like it just looks like an egg, and then figure four is the actual controller. I'm not sure if they're related. Like, is that the controller from the side, figure three?
Figure one and two is a baby chick and then a full-grown hen, and then figure three is the egg, and then four is the elastic controller that hatches out of it.
I know how that works.
I see a shield with like a handle to hold the shield from behind. It's just upside down.
That's because you're a real gamer.
I am a real gamer.
Casual chicken fans over here.
I prefer the egg thing because I like the idea of like a baby PlayStation controller hatching from it, and there's just a bunch of people sitting around, and they're like,
it's one of those ones you put in the bathtub. And then it the soap melts around it in a controller.
I think that is maybe not quite as weird of an idea as this actually is, because it gets weirder. So it's one thing to have something that you can, you know, manhandle and have it, I guess, sort of respond to that. The other thing is it would potentially use a combination of magnetic fluid and electric or magnetic fields to change the shape and hardness of the soft parts of this theoretical controller. So.
What?
In addition to you being able to twist it and bop it and crank it or whatever, it would also like reform. It would push back, which is just, I feel like It's just describing the weird, vaguely genital looking video game things from David Cronenberg's Existenz. Like, it's a weird throbbing sort of thing, but also it can get hot and cold. So
is this Venom?
I feel like this guy just filed this patent just like watched The Matrix last night and was just like, oh yeah, we can do this fluid and actual real thing.
I hope that Kojima saw this patent and immediately wrote a very long email to his entire team about what needs to be happening in Death Stranding 3, which is apparent. I don't, like, you gotta probably bend a golden baby until it turns ice cold or something. I don't know. But the controller can also change temperature. That's the other thing. So it changes temperature. It can respond to being elastically deformed. It can also change its own shape. So I don't...
Wait, it just changes its shape on its own, so...
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's got to be some kind of programming. It's not a self-aware controller that I'm aware of, though it does have, you know, magnetic fluid, not unlike the T-1000.
The temperature control thing, I gotta say, like, I have a problem with that. I like my hands to be warm normally, so I don't know who would... What's the value in a cold controller?
What if it's hot out?
Who, you're playing outside your PlayStation 5? No, outside,
I mean, sometimes the heat from outside gets inside the place where you are. I don't know.
Not everybody can afford air conditioning.
Not everyone can afford a PS5 either.
When I'm in my hermetically sealed gaming pod, not any temperature touches me. I'm perfectly suspended in neutral fluid. No, like, this is, I do like the idea of, like, oh, I don't know, you get burned in a game and suddenly your controller gets hotter, or you fall in the water and it just feels cold. Like, that would be kind of cool. I'm trying to think if I've ever experienced like a piece of technology that can change temperature on that scale. You know what I'm talking about? Like it's one thing for, I mean, haptics are one thing. You're like, we're kind of used to that. It's another thing for, like, you know, something that's designed, something that heats up accidentally. Like, if your phone is running too many videos or whatever, it overheats a little bit. You leave it on top of a hot car and then it shuts off because you're trying to kill it. Or your laptop gets hot or whatever. That's not really by design. Usually electronics go out of their way to cool off but not get extra cold.
Yeah.
So, like, a controller that has little refrigerators in it, I don't know how I feel about that.
So I like the heating method. I like that the idea of a controller can heat up, mostly because sometimes I'll like wake up early and I'll play, let me play a little games for a little bit before work, or I'll be up late and like my hands get cold and I'm like, oh, let me just heat my hands up with the controller I'm playing. That's kind of a cool idea. Like, I hate, you know, sometimes when you're, especially if you're playing like an FPS game or a fighting game, having cold hands is terrible. Like, that's why you see it, like, esports events, they'll have those little like handbags that are meant to heat, and so like you'll see the players kind of like squeezing them in their hands.
I need to point out that this is all new information for all of us right now, Joe. I don't think anybody knew that esports competitions had
heat bags. They're like little hot bags, and like they'll use them.
I don't know what they're called. Little hot bags.
I know that, little that's, hot pockets.
I know so little about esports. You come in here and be like, yeah, everyone in esports, they have a weasel they keep under the desk.
Okay, for you guys who don't watch esports but watch regular sports, you know how like when the quarterback has something to like to heat
his
hands.
His little hot bag.
Yes, exactly. He's got his little hot bags to keep his hands.
Little hot bag sounds like one of my like Italian mafia uncles.
Okay.
Go tell Little Hot Bags. He'll take care of it.
They warm up bags of Earl Grey tea and they just put them on their hands and they just, is that what you're talking about?
What do they do with
about?
All the wet tea?
They splash it on the coach. That's what they do. You know that. You've seen.
I'm learning so much.
Where is this episode going?
Where is this patent going? Where is this patent? Okay. Is this patent going anywhere? That's the question.
That's a good question. Because honestly, patents are sort of just calling
straight,
like,
to esports. That's where it's going, Akeem.
they're calling dibs on an idea that they thought up. Like, it's a thing they've clearly put enough effort into. They've put R&D money into it, and they want to make sure that they can say that's ours if it ever actually, you know, materializes. It's entirely possible it never goes anywhere. This seems like a pretty... Seems like it'd be pretty expensive, you know, like a controller that can change shape through magnetic fluid and also, you know, get hot and cold. But then again, that could also be, I don't know, completely commonplace technology in 20 years or whatever. And they're like, oops, we thought of that first. Remains to be seen. It's definitely kind of hard to even comprehend. Like, it's funny to think about. Like, we're clearly having a good chuckle about it. But, you know, it is cool to see kind of a little bit of insight into what's going on, you know, behind the scenes at Sony. Because, like, they make video game consoles. We know what those are, but they also try new things and they invent new stuff. And it's like, that's, you know, that's generally kind of above our pay grade. So it's fun to sort of hear
about
that.
It's nice to see a company trying to invent blubber. I'm all for it.
Yeah. I hope it's more of, I hope it's Flubber who is green and helpful and not the T-1000 who
That's our next Sony icon. It's going to be Flubber. Sony wants to get on the ground floor for Flubber, and they want to be the most authentic way of doing it.
A monopoly on Flubber. Disney's not going to like this. Those nutty professors. Now
I feel like does Hasbro have a monopoly on Flubber or just Monopoly? thank you again.
All right. So there's another thing that Sony patented, which seems a lot more feasible, I guess.
Akeem gave me like a pity laugh there. I'll take it.
That was not a pity laugh. I almost broke my chair.
Settle down over there.
I still think it's Venom because they're putting Venom in Spider-Man 2.
Sony does own the rights to Venom, so there's that. They don't have Flubber. I feel like gamers wouldn't like Flubber anyway, so they're just...
Venom's kind of between Flubber and T-1000 too, right? He's like an anti-hero, good guy, bad guy. He'll eat a guy's head, but also got a couple of his own movies where he's fighting worse people.
Yeah, that's a good point, Brian. Anyway,
you can move on.
The other thing that Sony patented is this again sounds like something the T-1000 would maybe shout, or I guess he doesn't really do that, but emotion detection and moderation based on voice inputs. So basically, it is a system that would keep an ear open for how people talk to each other over voice communication during online gaming and punish accordingly. So if somebody is just like shouting F-bombs and horrible stuff, you know, through their mic at other people they're playing with, they might get like a little red flag next to their name. And maybe if they kept doing that, they would just get banned, which honestly seems like something that probably should have existed already. Like you'd think that would have.
There's a lot of games now are doing like recording like in the background of voice chat so it can be monitored and checked later. If there's a report that comes in, they can check the log. I think Riot does it with Valorant now. And so I'm happy to hear that technology is getting, you know.
It's definitely creepy. Like it feels sort of like, you know, road to hell paved with good intentions kind of thing where it seems like it's
not going to catch the right stuff and it's also going to punish the wrong stuff. Like
that is, yeah,
historically like these things will just like flag like a real person's name and be like, sorry, you can't make a name. Like, oh, okay, I'll put it this way from personal experience. So my name is Brian Altano.
Oh,
hi, nice to meet you. That if you take the end of my first name and the beginning of my last name, it spells anal.
It does.
Yeah. And so there have been times where I try to use my real name in like a video game thing and they're like, sorry, you can't use that word. And I'm like, that word is in the middle of both of my names, but it's not what I represent, you know?
Blame your parents. Sorry, Brian.
They didn't think that one through. You know, I don't think a lot of people think of like the first name, like how much will they make fun of my kid? But they don't think like, how does my first name connect to my last name? Does it create body part in the middle?
See, I think in the future that's a great way to like really kind of vet future baby names is not only to like look up what the name means or whatever, but try to register that full baby name in an online game. And if they're like, no, there's cussies in there, you'll be like, oh, that's right, I have a secret bad word inside my kid's name, can't have that.
Yeah, a couple should sit around and like yell into their PlayStation and tell the PlayStation's like, that's good.
Sure. Well, in the future maybe they can. No, this is I mean we kind of see this in different forms. Like YouTube will pick up on certain words. There's definitely like, you know, if you say certain words in a video and don't bleep them out, then YouTube will swoop in and like demonetize that video because you said a bad word. You know, we see there's stuff in like on TikTok where I think there's a certain level of voice recognition, and it's kind of creepy how good that is. It's just nuts to me that like the previous version of this was just constantly recording everything and then having to have some kind of, you know, human oversight of somebody, you know, if you report another player for being, you know, too rowdy on the mic or whatever, then somebody has to cook like, okay, fine, we'll check their logs and be like, oh, they did say bad stuff. Okay. They get a red flag. In this case, I don't know. It's just going to be a robot taking care of that, which is,
I think there'll still be some level of human behind it for, you know, hopefully.
It also says emotion detection, by the way. So like, let's say like I sometimes get, when I get happy, it's kind of aggressive. So I'm kind of curious what's like, I'm happy right now. Like I scream and like, it might sound like anger. So I'm kind of curious how that.
Yeah, that Nintendo 64 kid would have been banned immediately. I mean, I do wonder how much of that is just going to be limited to like volume, you know? I mean, I'm sure there's going to be some level of like, tracking certain words or whatever, but as far as just how do you track emotion in somebody's voice, I don't know.
If someone gets a win in Fortnite, they might start screaming the F word, like, I effing won, yeah, I won. And like, right. I'm kind of curious if that falls yeah. in.
I mean, if it's good enough, it'll detect that's a happy win.
Apparently, it's also, it's like a two-way street where it tracks the other people's responses. So it's like, it's not just one person's noises being like kind of without context. I think if it tracks other people kind of getting, you know, getting more vocal, then they're like, oh, maybe this is a problem. But again, this is one of those things, whereas the controller that changes shape and changes colors or whatever is like, that's very physical and immediately understandable on like kind of like a goofy sort of out there sort of way. This is a lot more kind of like vague and nuanced in sort of how it can mm-hmm. be interpreted. And clearly there's tech there for it. But yeah, this seems like a much more likely thing we're going to see, but it's also less fun.
So like if Akeem gets really excited about something and he's like, yeah, I effing won. And I'm like, that's very mean. How dare you? And like, it recognizes that. Will it flag Akeem? If it's like a two-way street, I could react in a fake way to get him banned for just being genuinely excited about something, right? Can you game the system?
I don't know how dumb these robots are, but maybe.
just gaslight the robots.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, you could also just maybe do that a whole bunch of times, or just like act deliberately sad to whatever he said. And then if he like, you know, just dropped an offhanded F-bomb in like another game, it's just, it has all of these little reports logged, and it's just like, that's the third strike. And he didn't know he had any strikes.
I can hear Brian just being like, Akeem, I really don't appreciate that you beat me in these games. Yeah. It makes me really sad.
This just reminds me of like the thing in Demolition Man. Oh, I love this. Pulled up that boy, that German boy yelling at his keyboard, that ancient meme from the days of E-bombs world or whatever.
The fact that you remember the site name, I know, burned in our brain.
Only three websites.
There were only three back then.
There were only three webcams back then, and one of them caught this.
Yeah, this little German boy pounding his keyboard, and honestly, I still don't know if he's angry or happy or what, but maybe Sony's robot can figure that out. But yeah, I mean, this whole tech reminds me of in Demolition Man. There's those like little things that give you parking tickets for saying cuss words, and then Sylvester Stallone uses them to wipe his bottom because there's no toilet paper, because that's illegal too. I don't know. That's just it's definitely Big Brother territory. But also, if you don't want robots to eavesdrop on you, then why are you using a proprietary device to talk to people over the internet? You know, like, I don't think anyone's expecting like PlayStation online communication to be like completely, you know, interference free. Like, that's very much like you're playing in somebody else's clubhouse there. So weird. Now shifting gears here, this is something that is a lot less real. There's no patents. There's barely even, there's no paper trail for this, but there are rumors flying around right now that Sony is working on a new handheld. We've said repeatedly on this show that we would love it if Sony made a new handheld. The PSP is great. The Vita is amazing. We love those things. The Steam Deck is out there right now. The Switch is out there right now. Those are both examples of how you can do a great handheld in, you know, this present age of gaming. So it would be kind of cool if Sony, you know, threw their hat into the little handheld ring. But the rumors going around is there's something called the Q Lite, which is not exactly what we think of when we want a handheld. Typically, you sort of think of something that's portable. You let you take your gaming on the go. This is pretty much the opposite of that, because it is strictly for remote play with the PlayStation 5. So you would require, it requires a constant, stable internet connection. In most cases, it sort of seems like this would be more for just playing your PS5 from within the house. Sort of. It honestly just kind of sounds like a Wii U. And again, this is completely just, this is not corroborated. This is not official. This is very vague rumors, but people are talking about it. So I figure we could discuss a little bit.
It's for the people like that who want to play their games on their phone with a controller or their iPad.
Well,
and they
home,
have a giant TV
you.
that's sitting there just turned off.
But then also don't have a phone nor a controller, right? And need a new device.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. This is the classic, like, who is this for? Question, mm-hmm. right? And like, there it is. So we just showed, if you're watching or you're listening, PlayStation partnered with a company called Backbone, which I love the stuff they make. They make one thing, which is very, very awesome. It is a basically a controller grip for your phone, and you can use it to remote play in your PS5 or your Xbox, or do xCloud stuff, or play native iOS games using real buttons and sticks. And it's got shoulder buttons. Everything's like really, really awesome controller. And they made a PlayStation official one last year that's white, and it looks gorgeous. It looks in line with all of the PS5 branding and everything they've done. And so like that exists. That solves that problem, which is for a very small group of people who are like, I'd love to remote play to my PS5 on the couch while someone else is watching the TV or whatever it is, you know, whatever case use is there. Sony hasn't like historically or recently dabbled in cloud gaming very much in the same way that like Xbox has been like, hey, your entire Game Pass library is on xCloud, go enjoy. Sony like kind of pioneered that like a decade or so ago. They got really into like the Gaikai stuff and they were like really pushing for this for a minute and then kind of pulled back. So there's an opportunity for that to be a thing. Like, I know we recently got that Logitech device. It's effectively a Steam Deck that is just for cloud streaming. It's got native onboard SD card on it if you want to put ROMs and stuff, but for the most part, like, you can't just download a bunch of games on Steam and play them there. Everything is streamed. And so I guess they're going for that, but it doesn't seem like that made a splash. So I don't really understand why this would be a thing. Like, this
That thing came out shortly before Stadia was officially put to sleep. Like,
yeah,
that one of the, I think that thing had on the box, like, yeah, it works with Stadia. And then Stadia was like, Stadia doesn't work with Stadia. So that's an issue. But again, like, this shows, like, this feels like trying to meet a demand for something that doesn't yet exist, but also misses the point of what the thing it's trying to sell you in the first place. Like, remote play, it's cool, but the whole thing that works there is like what they show you in that trailer. It's like, yeah, use your existing controller with your laptop or your tablet. Or I think the Backbone is a great compromise there, where it's like a company that is good at making peripherals for mobile devices partnering with a company that, you know, makes the infrastructure that you're using to access that.
Yeah.
But it also it's so funny to me that Sony would be working on this. And again, completely hypothetical. This could all turn out to be total BS, but it's like, Sony makes tablets, Sony makes phones. It blows my mind that they don't sort of team up on that and maybe like, oh, like, here's the ultimate pairing. It's a Backbone and a Sony phone. It's the PlayStation package. It's the Xperia Play version 2.0, whatever. But like, everyone, I think cloud gaming is awesome. That is the future, but it also it's totally antithetical to the idea of buying new hardware. The whole point is using hardware you already have. Like, the whole thing with cloud gaming is that it's in the cloud. It's not on a device you have with you. So if you're going to buy a new device, you'd kind of hope that would do some of the heavy lifting itself and not just exist to access something far away. So I really, really hope this isn't a real thing, because I feel like we're all just going to be sitting here collectively facepalming over it.
No, cloud gaming is like a additive feature to native console gaming, right? It is a bonus to me. Like, if I can have my games downloaded on my PS5, but then I can also cloud stream them, then cool. That's awesome. Give me the flexibility. Give me options. But to create a device that only funnels you into one of those options is like fundamentally missing the point. It's also like, we saw with Stadia, consumers weren't willing to spend $70 on just cloud streaming a game. Like, you do want some sense of ownership there. And so, like, it's got to be able to speak with your PS5 better. If they did a thing where you could natively onboard, save, and load PlayStation games, like maybe access your entire PlayStation Plus library or PlayStation Now, that kind of stuff. And then you could also play all the games that they've ported to Steam, which at this point is, you know, Returnal, The Last of Us, Uncharted, Spider-Man's. There's tons of stuff there that, like, they're already putting on systems that work as handhelds, right? Like, most of their games, aside from The Last of Us, which stumbled recently, have communicated really well with PC. And so, like, there is an option to take those games and put it on a native handheld, but not as just a cloud streaming thing. Because, like, if you're on an airplane and that airplane takes off and you can't play Returnal anymore because it's not connected to the airport Wi-Fi, like, you've completely missed the point of selling a portable device.
Yeah, I mean, I think the cloud thing is... There is a future where cloud streaming makes sense as a portable solution to gaming, because you're not lugging your entire console with you. But when you're going between point A and point B, like, I don't know, if you're at grandma's house and grandma has decent Wi-Fi, maybe you're going to stream something on your phone. However, if you're on the train or on the plane, or you go getting from your house to grandma's house and it takes a minute, you're bored at an airport, it doesn't really make sense to have something that requires a stable internet connection, at least not right now. Maybe someday that'll be a non-issue, but like, I don't know. I feel like we're very much, if you're gonna shell out money for a portable gaming device, that thing needs to be functional when it's portable. Like, it has to be you have to be able to use it wherever you're going, not just in certain spots that it may be supported.
You know, we saw that with you know, the Vita, because there was the option when the when it first launched to get the one with the what the 3G, I think it was at the time. You could get the 3G service and you could pay to have, you know, a chip for to that and pay I think it was through AT&T if I remember right. Yeah, and so like they took that kind of into consideration. I feel like that was kind of their first step for kind of like testing the waters for doing that, for being able to stream, or not stream necessarily, but download and play online outside of the house on a handheld. And I feel like if this doesn't do something along those lines, like you're saying, of having some like fallback to be able to play when you're not connected to the internet, it's dead in the water.
Well, I mean, I love that, like, prior to the Vita coming out, there was the weird little PlayStation phone, which was an entire, it was like the Sony Ericsson Xperia Play that flipped out and you could play some games on it, but it wasn't designed primarily for gaming. And then you had the Vita, which you could get a 3G plan with through AT&T, but it wasn't a phone. So it was like, maybe...
Let's talk to each other in the meetings. Let's get these departments together and
more water coolers and let people have some chat in that big business. Just let them hang out with each other.
This is a rumor, so we can leave it at that. Like, honestly, I feel like I would question the strategy if this were true, just because we just got some PlayStation hardware with the PSVR 2, and you know, we talked about this in our meeting yesterday, how like as someone who's a VR enthusiast, like PSVR 2 got me back into VR. You know, I told y'all about what I've been hooking up, pimping out my Quest 2, even though like I pretty much cursed it like weeks ago. But
I told you not to hit it with a hammer.
I'm glad I didn't. I am so glad I didn't destroy it. But the thing is, like, the reason I got back into my Quest 2 is because there's significant lack in games being announced and released on the PSVR 2. And so I would like to see more support being thrown at the PSVR 2. Like, it's not to say that I wouldn't want like a PlayStation handheld, but I feel like that's like, if the rumors are true, it's scheduled to come out sometime in 2024 before the, again, also rumored PlayStation 5 Pro. If I'm reading this correct, like I want at least like let's give a year or two support to the PSVR 2. You know, I like. Sales aren't doing too well right now, so how about we just support what we currently have on the market? Like in my opinion, true. I feel like that's what we should be doing.
It's also Sony's a massive company, so these are, I'm guessing, different departments working on this kind of stuff. You know, the people who don't get to work in the top secret hot and cold controller lab or whatever. But I mean, thinking back, like at the tail end of the PS4, there, do you remember there was that? It was like two extra buttons.
Yeah.
Put on the DualShock 4. And we were all like, oh, okay. So the DualShock 5, the DualSense, as it was eventually called, is gonna have paddles on the back. It's gonna have extra bonus buttons. It's gonna be great. And then that wasn't the case at all. Like, unless you get the
$200 DualSense Edge.
So it was just this weird little just vestigial thing that you could click on. It was what, like $30 or something?
Yeah, I think it sounds right, $30 or $40. Like, I think what was more valuable for me in the PS4 lifespan was the keypad, like being able to like be able to clip the keypad on the bottom, because I played Final Fantasy 14 on PlayStation, and so I was able to like type to my other people in my clan or guild and stuff like that. It made sense. Smart.
And then I don't know, just having a weird programmable. It's such a half measure, like two extra buttons that are programmable to be anything you want.
I also like how this is like. More high tech. This like attachment is more high tech than what we got in the DualSense Edge. Like, the DualSense Edge is great. I love it, the way it's like magnetic and you can just kind of you know, plug and play and pull things out as you see fit. But like this one had an LED screen, which totally unnecessary because it's on the back of your controller.
My reasoning for bringing that up is that made it to market.
Yeah,
that's this completely like just wackadoo little extra bonus thing that they just tossed out there, and I guess it maybe did okay. I don't know. I mean, there was also the PlayStation TV, which was a Vita without being a Vita. You just plugged it into your TV.
I still have that. I like that.
People love that. It was a cool thing, but again, sort of a weird, neither here nor there kind of thing.
Yeah,
these things do make it to market. So I mean, in that sense. The idea of a Q light, whatever that means. I feel like Q is kind of a cursed letter these days, but maybe maybe this is all wacky conspiracy theories, but like this could also happen. This could come to fruition. This could be a real thing that makes it to market. And Yeah.
Will you buy it, Max? Will you buy
Absolutely not.
Okay.
I just want a backbone to be made for Android phones because it's iPhone only right now. So like,
I got the cheap version of this, which was a third party like clip that goes on your DualSense with a phone mount, which is really poorly made. It's extremely flimsy, and sometimes it just like the phone like falls forward. So I'll be trying to game, and it just and so maybe in that sense, this is a good huge improvement. But yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, this definitely sounds better than the worst thing out there that you have.
Yeah, it probably also costs hundreds of times more money. Anyway, I'm curious what people make of this. Is this a handheld that we'd want? Because I'm kind of feeling like this is not what we'd want from a new Sony handheld. We want another Vita.
I want them to take the patent from the moldable controller and put that into the next PSVR headset so it can mold around you as you play.
Make a Sega Nomad that plays PS4. All right, so shifting gears here, we've all been playing a bunch of Resident Evil 4, whether that is the campaign or the newly dropped Mercenaries mode, which is a ton of fun, and it's kind of a cool callback to the original. But I feel like the main game was this massive kind of recapturing of everything great about the original game. Mercenaries mode feels a little bit light. I feel like there's some stuff that's missing that they could add. I feel like Brian, you and Jada both have some more time with this.
It's cool. I mean, it's a very arcadey feel as Mercenaries is meant to be. Obviously, we're missing a few characters that we'd like to see, Wesker and Ada. But I mean, overall, it's a nice little start. It's a nice start for Mercenaries. I didn't mess around too much with it on Village. Brian, I think you probably messed around with it more on Village.
I did, yeah. And I also played a ton in the original. And I think that the thing is, Resident Evil Remake is so good at recapturing everything about what made the original awesome, that when stuff is missing, it sticks out more. Like, we don't have a Simon Ada yet, right? And although that wasn't built into the base GameCube game when it first launched, it was added to PS2. And so I would love to see that come down the line. But like, Mercenaries in the original game had more characters, and the version we have right now isn't there yet. And so I'm wondering if they're doing a thing where they're like, they're going to create this kind of trickle effect where they go, we'll add a couple of things here and there to get people to come back more often. Cause that's the kind of the name of the game with, most, side modes like this these days. Like, this is not a multiplayer game. It's not online co-op or anything yet. Although it could be down the line. But so I wonder if they're like, here's, Mercenaries right now. It's got a couple of characters. It's got a couple of levels. But then later on, we're going to do a Simon Ada. We're going to airdrop Ada into Mercenaries. You're gonna get Wesker because we built the character model for him for this game, all this fun stuff, and that'll get people like me and Jada and everyone else here to return to this mode more and more often. So maybe that's the strategy.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think you're 100% on the dot with that, Brian. I talked with some folks at Capcom like years ago, before I even joined IGN, but like I was just at a dinner or whatnot, and they were one of the things they were trying to figure out is, how do we take our big franchises like Resident Evil and not make them a one note type thing, to where like, yes, they're great, they sell amazing right at the start, but then that's pretty much it, and then there's no more hype for it for the rest of the year. How do we keep people wanting to come back? And so I think doing that trickle effect with things like Mercenaries mode and adding more characters is a great way to do it.
I mean, I think there's a nice happy medium between a game that comes out and is just never talked about again, and games as a service that's just a constant, dull roar of just new content. And I feel like they've been walking a pretty good line there. Like, we got the, the Winter's expansion for Village, which added third person mode and VR mode. That's not out yet. No, I'm crazy. That's coming out though. Is it?
No, VR's mode's out for Village. Sorry. Yes,
VR mode's already out. Yes.
And then that, I think
the third person mode came out like right before, or right after.
Right. I'm totally before, getting myself confused. Is there plan for PSVR 2 support for 4?
Yes.
Okay, yes.
So,
yes.
So yes.
And it's already playable entirely in on MetaQuest, but that's the old game.
Correct.
There
is so many versions that I do not blame you for this getting that mixed up. It is a very good problem to have with a good game.
Yeah. Point being, back when the original RE4 came out, like, you would put a game on a disc and that was it. And then if you wanted to add new stuff to it, you'd maybe put out a new version of it or port it to a new system and add something like the Ada expansion. But in this case, it's like you can just put up a patch and add new stuff and shake things up. So I would be I would be surprised if we don't see new characters kind of regularly added to Mercenaries mode. And also, like, you look at Mercenaries mode, and that is the sort of gold standard of Resident Evil when it's not being classic Resident Evil. You know, they've been kind of chasing this ghost for a while of, like, you know, we've had weird multiplayer stuff like Operation Raccoon City or the Umbrella Corps. And, like, that's not really what people want from Resident Evil. But then again, people love Mercenaries, so it's like, what?
Like,
and then, yeah.
Yeah, people pick a side. What was
the one with that came out alongside 3?
That was Resistance.
Resistance.
So Resident Evil Resistance, and that was the asymmetrical where you would play as, like, one of the masterminds, and other people would play 4 random nobodies trying to go through, like, this dungeon, basically. I really liked Resistance, but only when I was playing as the mastermind, because I got to set all my traps and watch all the dumb people go through and die to a bunch of, like, zombie dogs and other stuff.
They've been playing with this little sort of, you know, side, like, sort of B-side to the game, and, like, RE3 remake, RE2 remake were great, but then they've had these other little sort of things they've thrown in there which feel like they're just not quite hitting the mark. But in this case, people associate Mercenaries with 4, so it's like it's kind of a good balance there. But, like, what do we want to see besides Wesker and Ada, I guess?
Ashley.
You want to play as Ashley?
I do. I saw people have modded her into the main campaign, and it's awesome. More
costumes.
Is she
wearing the knight's armor the whole way through?
No, she's just wearing her basic, like, you know, I'm going to the library to study outfit.
Because I would love to play through as Ashley wearing the knight armor, just so I could just walk up to people and let them try to pick me up, and then just I think it's great, and I think you're right about the Mercenaries mode. I think we got to this point now where DLC is kind of almost an expected quantity when it comes to a big blockbuster game coming out. Back in the day, it wasn't as common. It was very rare for us to get any type of additional content for the games we played and loved.
Expansion packs
were, like, that was a big thing. And so back then they were like, we have to cram as much as we can into this one expansion pass because we're not going to be able to do this again. Like, it's just not feasible for back then. Now it is, like you said, just drop a patch.
Yeah.
So right now we have 3 major areas in Mercenaries, right? We have Village, Castle, and Island, right? And they kind of mirror the 3 big beats that you're in the game. But all of those areas have, in the main game, in the main campaign, tons of areas you haven't gotten to in Mercenaries. Like, Village in Mercenaries is just the opening Village section where you have your first big
overwhelming
showdown.
This is Mike footage. I love this guy. It's like Mercenary, but he's just wheelbarrowing
a
bundle of, like, flour or wheat. I don't know what it was. I was just running through, and I was just like, this dude is just like, you know what, I don't care,
he's
about
just working.
I'm just working in the village.
He was like, I don't want to be part of this. But, like, there's later areas around the village that are not part of Mercenaries yet, and one of them that I really like is that kind of, like, fishing area where there's just, like, there's multiple levels. There's all the water with, like, snakes in it.
The the swamp that is it's like fish farms, I think.
The fish farms, whatever.
Yeah, the hatchery. So I think that would make an awesome level. Like, you'd have to, there's a lot of good push and pull there with verticality. There's 3 tiers, right? Like, there's the swamp area, there's that middle walkways, and then there's the upper deck. And I think that, like, all of that would make for, like, a super cool kind of arcade mode. There's enough, like, tunnels and ladders and houses and nonsense there that
you
can run into.
There's a lot of great areas for this. Like, any place where you basically have to deal with a bunch of mobs and, you know, fight them off seems well suited. Like, there's that whole part pretty early on, which is, I guess, still the village, but it's a different corner of the village where there's that big rope bridge, and you got to get the gold, the, you know, bird amulet or whatever to open the door. And, like, that
area would be great.
Well suited. Yeah, you can run around.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah. Wait until a boss shows up and then break the bridge or whatever. Like, that seems very fun.
Like,
yeah.
I think we should get, like, an interior castle. Yeah, I think the interior castle would be great. The throne room.
Oh, God.
The area with the tar pits of tar pit fountains. Give me that room. What else? There's a bunch of other areas.
Big bug hive.
Yeah, the bug hive. I don't want that level because I don't want to have to do what the bugs and Mercenaries.
Well, the one I agree we don't want is the science lab with the regenerators.
No, I want that one.
No, we don't want
that.
We don't.
Max, I want that.
How too good at
how
this
many
game.
Regenerators? Actually, Jada wants it because Jada is, like, absolutely nasty at this game, and Jada could take down, like, 40 regenerators.
Go play Counter-Strike.
This footage, I don't know how much we'll get to see, but, like, I think right now it's just about the combat starting, because, like, that's the strategy for Mercenaries. You run around, grab all the items, and then you fight everybody in one chain, because if you want the top score, you have to chain all 150 enemies. If you don't do that, you will not get placed top. I placed, I think, 4,922 out of the 50,000 on the leaderboards for this run.
Jada, come on.
Awesome. You know, humble brag.
4,000 place. Come on.
I was just under 5,000 to be, you know, to be honest. So it's just, you know, I barely made that.
That's awesome. I'm kidding.
But yeah, so you'll see, like, this is all, this is just me as Krauser just running around, just knifing people in the face. It's 90% of my kills are all with the knife. But that's also playing to his strength, because he has stronger melee damage and stuff like that. I'm like, oh, right. I missed an item. Oh, I wonder if this, oh no, I think I cut that part. I had to
put that guy's face with your knife.
Yes, I cut that as well. Yeah. Yes, I cut all of that.
I think, like, more costumes, more like alt looks that, for the characters, more accessories, weapons. I really like that you can unlock the hand cannon in this, because that was like one of the coolest classic weapons. And so, like, getting stuff in this that feeds into the main campaign and vice versa, right? Like, if you know, you get all the cat ears and all the other fun stuff that you can get in the main game, like, let players, like, basically just build out a whole world there where they can fully accessorize.
I love that dynamic where there's, like, the single player thing, you unlock stuff, and then there's multiplayer stuff, and they kind of feed into each other, and the stuff you unlock one place goes elsewhere. Not the case with mercenaries, but, like, some things you unlock can go in the main game. Is that right? Or was that the case in the original, I guess? Like,
I don't remember what unlocks from the mercenaries converted over to the main game.
From the GameCube one, but yeah, this time around we have the hand cannon, which you unlock and can use in the single player campaign.
Yeah, I saw people. So you could, Las Plagas removal laser or whatever.
That's
not in the game, but I saw people speculating that maybe that would show up in mercenaries, and then it didn't, and then, like, maybe it'll show up in Ada. If they drop Ada in there. But yeah, the weird thing is, I feel like we've got mercenaries, which is awesome. We've got rumors of Separate Ways. Would we want to see them do, like, something original, or would that just be weird? Like, would they, if they went completely, like, if they did like a
Luis side story where he plays Luis?
Take it all.
Yeah, that'd be fine. Yeah,
I think that'd be cool. I think if it's done right and it's in the universe properly, I think
jet ski adventure, I'm into it.
Heck yeah.
What happens afterwards? How are you going to get back to the president's house with that?
I mean,
I'll take anything they want to make in this engine with these characters in this world, and really any RE game, but, like.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn, because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Linsky.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
If they want to keep building out 4 and they're like, wow, we're really happy about this, we have more stories we want to tell in Resident Evil 4. Yes, absolutely. I'll take them.
I want an original story around the merchant. I want to know more about this mysterious character.
Put him in Mercenaries.
Well, I mean, you can do that, but I mean, I want to know what he does and just his, you know, where, how does he acquire all of the equipment that he gets? Like, I want to go on like a scavenger hunt or something.
Akeem, you're really setting me up for a great segue to this next thing I want to talk about, which is specifically the merchant. The Resident Evil 4 merchant is one of the best and most absurd parts of a game that is already great and jam-packed with completely ridiculous over-the-top stuff, but he also exemplifies everything that makes that game great, as well as just games as a whole. This guy first pops up in a random window like a sock puppet. He just pops up, and then he coaxes Leon to meet him around a corner with all of the subtlety and salesmanship of a crack dealer in a 1980s anti-drug PSA. He's vaguely menacing at first, and then you quickly realize how, you know, goofy he is. And really, that is like so much of the Resident Evil series. It is scary at first, and then it's silly. And that's why it's so great. The merchant's design also completely distills RE4's visual sensibilities into one guy. His clothes and his mask and his knapsack kind of make him look like he stepped out of a fantasy RPG. And then he opens his coat, and it's very clear that his area of expertise is the other kind of RPG. And that's really the game's whole aesthetic. It's this incongruous mix of creepy old fairy tale stuff like villages and castles and giants, but it's also slick futuristic stuff like scientific laboratories and submachine guns with thermal scopes and bioengineered weapon men. It's a weird game. It's all over the place. In what universe would somebody trade an old antique goblet covered in hand-inlaid gemstones for an automatic rifle and a spray can of Bactine? Well, in the Resident Evil universe, it doesn't make any sense, but it works because video games. You will guide Leon through the most arduous, death-defying obstacle course, fighting off unthinkable horrors, and you walk around the corner, and this merchant chucklehead has folded out his little table and put up his spooky lantern that he got from Spirit Halloween, and he's there, and he's ready to buy your dead fish and chicken eggs and sell you a laser sight for your gun. Why not? How did he get there? It doesn't matter, because you're always happy to see him, and he's always happy to see you, because we love him. He's wonderful. I've seen theories that maybe the merchant isn't one guy, but a bunch of different guys who dress up the same and spout the same one-liners, but if anything, that makes him even more ridiculous. Like, he's a scary mall Santa who sells guns? That's odd. So many games bend over backwards to explain around their own video gaminess, adding as much context as possible to try to quell any ludonarrative dissonance that the player might feel when one of the systems that makes the game fun to play shatters any sense of realism or immersion. Resident Evil 4 not only does it try to hide its video gaminess, it flaunts it, it leans into it. And whether you're suplexing a little old lady, stealing an antique piece of jewelry off the corpse of a genetically engineered monster, or rearranging everything in your purse so you can have room for a crossbow that shoots landmines. It's wacky, it's all over the place, and we love it. What is the merchant doing with all these valuable antiques? Who is supplying him with guns in the first place? Do any of the game's many horrible enemies actually try to kill him, or is he cool with them? That seems like a weird relationship. Do they buy stuff from him? Did he sell that guy his chainsaw? Most importantly, if his back is killing him, why doesn't he just take off his pack and sit down? Like, get a chair. Trade one of your crowns for a chair. They're not that expensive. Also, he's apparently canonically friends with the Duke from Resident Evil Village. What do they do when they're not buying and selling stuff? Do they hang out? Do they, like, go fishing, or they...
Gun convention.
Antique show, probably. Yeah. Gem fair. As far as completely nonsensical things in video games that we take for granted go, the merchant is right up there with finding an entire roast chicken in a castle wall or fitting a rocket launcher into your back pocket. And really, RE4 wouldn't be the same without him. I love you, merchant. I want more of you. You should be in every video game. You're the best. Stranger.
Aww.
Thank you.
That was a beautiful love story to the merchant.
Who doesn't love the merchant? The merchant's great. Everyone loves the merchant.
Multiple merchant thing. That I've never thought of that. That blew my mind. I hope that's not true. I don't. I don't like their brothers or something. There's like a whole family of them.
Yes,
it's a business.
I mean, family tree.
I looked up some YouTube video that was like, "Who is the merchant?" Ari Lore explained, and this dude gets to that part. It's like, maybe it's a bunch of different ones, and I just like closed the video, and I was like, "How dare you?"
Okay, what do you mean it's a business? Like, they all wear, you know, like that, like the best
uniform.
Like the Blue Man Group, you know, it's like there's a bunch of blue men that don't talk that look exactly alike. So it makes sense to me.
Is that your go-to group when you think of a business?
They're selling you entertainment.
It's a business, like the Blue Man Group.
Yes, they're selling you entertainment.
Are they an LLC or a nonprofit? Did anyone ever dig into that?
A Blue Man Group?
A group is vague. I don't know.
They're a BLUE.
How dare you?
But no, Max, I gotta say, look, I love that you gave the, you know, the merch and all this love, but you and I are gonna have to duke it out a little bit because you mentioned the guy who I'm a huge fan of, and that is the Duke. Much bigger fan of his than I am of your merchant, and honestly, that's just because I played Resident Evil Village before I ever played RE4. But I have six reasons for you to rebut what you just said. Six reasons why the Duke is actually better than the merchant.
Always got to be a list at IGN.
I mean, you know, I got to have a list go here. Now, number one, Duke knows you. The Duke actually knows your name. The merchant, he can't be bothered to learn Leon's name. He calls him Stranger. I don't know if he thinks the S in Leon S. Kennedy stands for Stranger. It doesn't. All right. It stands for Scott. Now, number two.
Is that canonical? Is Leon Scott Kennedy?
I read it on the Wikipedias. It better be. I read it on the Wikipedias. If Wikipedia is lying to me, I'm going to have some discussions with some people over at Wiki.
We definitely all agree it's not Stranger, right?
It's definitely Leon Stranger Kennedy. Does that make sense to anybody?
Nickname. I think they're so close that he's got a cool nickname that only the Duke calls him. They're like that. They're buds, you know?
No, get the hell out of here. No, stay here because I want you to listen to my reasons. Number two, Duke directs you. Now, throughout Resident Evil 8, the Duke gives you a sense of direction and provides backstory when needed to help guide you to where you should go next. Outside of peddling his wares, the merchant doesn't care where the hell you go as long as you come back and buy more stuff from him.
He warned you not to go forward without any and not have regrets, though.
That's it. He says that almost every single freaking time. He doesn't give you any new information. Come on now. The Duke actually gives you new information each and every time. He's the one that told you, spoiler alert, that your daughter was inside that damn tube. Remember that? You remember that.
That's anyways, true, yeah.
Thank you. Reason number three. Duke wants to know who you are. He's not afraid to show you his face, even being so vulnerable to show you his belly and bricked up feet. Like the merchant... He's wearing a freaking mask as if Las Plagas is an airborne virus. He needs to stay exactly 6 feet away from you so he doesn't catch it or something. I mean, I want to see what he looks like underneath that mask, man. Just let me see the tip of your nose at least. We can't even see that with this guy. Now, number four, the Duke is a conversationalist, right? He talks to you. He wants to have conversations with Ethan outside of the typical, you know, canned voice lines you hear throughout the game as you buy things. Ethan and the Duke exchange dialogue. Now, while the merchant's lines are, I admit, Max, they are very funny, I'd like to know more about the masked item seller. Like, you know,
show me his feet.
Yeah, I want to see his feet. I want to see his belly. I want to know where he goes to vacation. There's no way he's staying there to vacation. That place is fucking weird. Excuse my language. Bleep that out. Bleep that out. Bleep the F-bomb out. Reason number five. I'm very passionate about the Duke. I love that fat man. Now, the Duke mentions his friends, which, Max, you said earlier. The Duke's, you know, he's got a big mouth. He's got a big mouth. I was expecting y'all to say, how big is it? The Duke's got a big mouth.
How big is it?
Well, it's so big that we know because of him that he and the merchant were friends. Now, how come the merchant ain't ever mentioned that obese, oversized hobbit that sells wear similar to him, huh? That's a one-side friendship. And don't tell me the chicken came before the egg, which is why he never mentioned the Duke. I'm thinking he should have said something about a Duke, even if he was talking about cards. Anyways, reason number six, the Duke is important to the plot. The Duke's presence later on in the game becomes part of the narrative as he's directly involved in the journey towards the end of the game. All right, he shares some meaningful words with Ethan that shows to the gamer, underneath all those belly rolls and bacon bits, there's a heart of gold, potentially plagued with a future spat of coronary embolism. but still, while I understand people like you, Max, love the merchant, because of his one-sided banter, the Duke is the king.
Okay.
Hold on.
That was very good.
Yes, I agree.
Should we work really backwards here?
I have to clap on myself.
Yeah, let's work backwards. I'm going to start. Can I go first?
Sure.
It's very quick.
Couple of claps.
No claps till we're done. Has the Duke ever opened a door for Mr. Winters? Because in Resident Evil 4, if the merchant doesn't come and open a door for you, you're locked in that room.
Mm.
You're stuck, captured. The merchant goes out of his way.
You went way more
to
specific.
Save.
You said the Duke is the king. I was going to say, by definition, the Duke is not the king.
That too.
He's the Duke. It's in the name. It's very nice of you to say he's the king, but I've shows a fundamental misunderstanding of monarchy.
Look, how dare you drop a big dookie on what I'm saying right now? Okay, come on now. Look, give me this, Max. He may not have opened up a physical door. He has opened up a physical door. His carriage. It was a door to his carriage, which you are in.
Oh, fine. Okay.
It just magically opens up the door to his carriage.
So the Duke is important to the plot and the merchant isn't? Merchant, you get all the cool stuff.
Akeem, I clap for you. I'll be honest. Three out of six of your points were basically the same.
what do you mean? Which one? Hold on here.
You basically had 2 points. One that he's like friendly and helpful, and the other that he will show you his stuff. Like,
and he cares about you and your feelings.
Yes. He's also part of the narrative.
Two arguments
more so
here.
Than the friend,
friendly and helpful.
The fact that he mentions his friends, he's just name droppy. The merchant obviously is friends with the Duke, but he doesn't feel the need to just be like,
he doesn't need to.
I know a guy who has a whole wagon full of machine guns and gemstones.
I know an oversized guy.
I
don't know. It's just, look, I talk about Max and Brian all the time, and you too, Jada, all right? I always talk about you all. I name drop all the time. You mean to tell me the merchant couldn't name drop this guy? I mean, he couldn't physically pick him up, but he goes to a
Banana Republic and they're like, can we help you find anything? And you're like, not shopping here anymore. They do that to let you know that they're watching you to shoplift.
Yep.
They don't do that because they care about you.
100%
fact about loss prevention retail. And also it's annoying. I will pay more to go to a place where they don't talk to you at all. I don't even want to see people who work there. I want to be lost in the store. I get to the register. They're like, you need help finding anything? Like, you asked me that a while ago.
And
I wouldn't have said yes then.
I'll let you in on a secret. Like, majority of the time, the workers don't even want to have to do that.
No,
like,
we're shy.
Don't get me wrong. Like, those who love customer service and exaggerate it, like, I used to do that, and I enjoyed talking to my customers. But it got to a point where, like, in my retail experience, like, I would have district managers coming into my store watching my camera and be like, hey, why didn't that employee go and greet that person on the floor? Like, well, they said hello. Like, that's not enough. They need to be on the floor in their face. I'm just like...
So you think Mother Miranda is like scolding the Duke when he doesn't go and talk to people that come into the village? Is that what you're telling me right now?
I like that we're really getting deep on just sort of the retail differences here. I don't know.
There were various moments where we all collectively had like a slight grasp of what's happening here, and I feel like it's completely flown out of our hands.
I've got the thing that's gonna like will differentiate who's actually better.
I mean, you haven't told me who's better. Like, I'm gonna, here it is.
This will decide.
You're too tall to shoplift. I'm just going to say it. You can't. you can't be that big and steal clothes. It's silly.
I have too many colors in my hair to shoplift. Like, it's like, oh, yep, it was that person with the four colors in her hair. No, this is what will decide it. Who gives the better sell back rate? Who buys back the weapons, buys back items for more money? That's who shopkeeper is. Because
the Duke is putting money
in the hands of Ethan or Leon, and whoever's getting more money, they're obviously being treated.
We haven't talked about this. The Duke cooks for you. Like, is he a store
or a restaurant? I don't get it.
He's both. You know, he's one of those.
He's a Costco where you can go and get like a hot dog.
Just look, can we stop comparing him to a store? I know he's big, but geez, come on. This is like very offensive.
He's got big money. He's got a wagon covered in garlic. Yeah,
he's got a big wagon. We've all seen it. Like.
Yes,
I respect
Urban Dictionary term of wagon.
The pluckiness of the merchant. He has to unfold all those like rickety tables and put up those little homemade shelves and hang up all his merch.
He's got like one little like home base, kind of the one like by the lake. It looks like he's more kind of set up there.
Artist alley at Comic-Con, but he's just selling brooches and guns and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to like cart that stuff away. His back hurts.
What I will say is this: the Duke probably wouldn't exist if it wasn't for the merchant. Yes. Obviously, the merchant paved the way for what we got in Village, mm-hmm. In the Duke. Obviously, the Duke is like a more, I would say, more realized version of, or fleshed out version of the merchant. Like when Resident Evil 4 first came out, you know, I mean, it was you know, the earlier days of gaming. So, you know, now we've evolved as gamers, as the games industry has evolved.
Yeah, and
so
canonically,
we got the Duke.
The merchant yep. talked the Duke into opening a wagon store. You look that, there's a note hidden behind one of the suits of armor, and it says it tells a story about how he founded the Duke's Wagon Emporium.
I don't know. I think I missed that note.
I made
Max.
That up.
I don't
it's
know.
Not true.
I don't think.
But yes, I like it. It's my headcanon.
There's a bunch of knights in both games, so I see it could work.
So good. We're settled. The Duke is better. Thank you.
Anyway, yeah.
Figure that out in the comments section.
You're not in studio.
They're both great. I like them both a lot. I think the Duke, the fact that he sells food is great too. That's everybody's always hungry after a long day of shopping. You go to Home Depot, there's always like a truck in the parking lot. You know, they sell hot dogs sometimes.
So he's not the Home Depot. He's the guy. He's the truck outside the Home Depot.
Yeah.
Y'all compared him to Banana Republic, Costco. Mm-hmm. Why y'all keep comparing this big man to stores? Why can't he just be a man?
This episode of Beyond Egg, you buy stores.
They're both stores. It's just that one of them runs a food truck too.
But you all haven't said the merchant is like McDonald's selling you nuggets.
No, because the McDonald's merchant would be more like Starbucks. He's on like every corner.
Okay. Jada, you've been playing a game besides Resident Evil.
I have.
Meet Your Maker.
Hell of a transition.
Hell of a transition. I've been playing Meet Your Maker. It's this kind of Super Mario Maker meets Doom kind of mashup. I'm going to be honest. My first 24 hours of this game, I hated it. I absolutely hated this game the first 24 hours of playing this game. But then I started building my own dungeon, which you guys are seeing here. And this is footage of somebody going through my dungeon and dying multiple times. And that is where I fell in love with Meet Your Maker, is the ability to create my own dungeon with my own traps and fill it with my own enemies and put them in diabolical places. There's fire, there's bombs, there's bolt shots, there's skewers, invisible blocks, lava blocks, traps, and all types of other fun things that I've hidden throughout this dungeon. And this is my very first one, so it's still very kind of early, but this guy's about to die right here, as you can see, because he did not cut through my guy's armor, and I love it. But yeah, it's great. So like, as you progress and play through levels, you get materials, and then you can upgrade your own arsenal as well as buy new equipment for your dungeon, different traps, upgrades for those traps. So there's ones you can set to where they don't appear until you're escaping the dungeon, because you have to go into the dungeon, grab like this core called Gen Mat, and then you have to escape the dungeon. And so like, it's kind of a two-wave thing where you can set up traps to trigger on the way out mm-hmm. instead of on the way in, and they're invisible until they grab the core. But yeah, and I just really love that there's all types of different varieties for it. I don't really enjoy going through other people's dungeons as much. Like, it's fine. But for me, it's kind of scratching that itch of like level designing and building something, because there's a lot of nifty tools in there that I'm really enjoying.
This is fascinating because, like, I was expecting you to completely latch on to the competitive side of this.
Mm.
But again, yeah, it's sort of two games in one. I didn't mess with the creative side of it. Now I'm kind of curious, which it's funny because it's a completely different philosophy. Like, you're doing something entirely different. And it's funny to me because, like, there's a sort of almost modular hobbies where, like, some people get into Warhammer because they want to play Warhammer. Some people get into Warhammer because they want to paint miniatures. And it's like, you kind of need both of those to really make it work. But in this case, mm-hmm. like, you actually really need both of them. And it's, I don't know, like, have you haven't been really messing with other people's maps too much.
So I mean, I go through probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 maps a day, probably just to get enough materials to like upgrade a few things and add a few things to my dungeon. One of the things about building the dungeon as well as you kill people, they drop resources in your dungeon, which you can also use to upgrade. And as you get enough, after you get enough kills,
they just like leave their crap at your house.
Basically.
Oh my God. So it's like if you ran a carnival and all the keys and cell phones that fell out of people on the roller coaster, you got to keep that.
You got to keep it, sell it, and make, you know, craft it into something new, craft into some armor for your,
Keepers.
You know, the hairless person. I don't know. Just reaching for a carny person.
Thanks, Jada.
You're welcome. But yeah, and as you kill people or they complete your dungeon, they can rate your dungeon like, oh, this was really artistic, or this is ingenious, or this is brutal, or this is one other thing. I can't remember what the fourth option is ever. You get to upgrade your dungeon, which expands the max amount of materials you can put in the dungeon. So as you level up your dungeon and it becomes more notorious online and other people are playing it, you get to make it bigger. And oh, I think this is my favorite trap right here. He's gonna grapple like his, oh no, this is this guy I think kills him. I don't remember.
Didn't you brought in like 14 minutes of footage?
This is like 14 minutes okay. of footage. So like if you're ever going through that dungeon, like my dungeon, if you see it online, I think this one's called Big Bear Lake.
What?
I don't know why it's called that. I don't know why it's called Big Bear Lake. I don't get to name them. You don't get to name them.
They have murder families going on vacation. Wait,
you don't get the name? What do you mean? How'd you get that name?
That it's just so you basically there's like burial sites and you can purchase a burial site, which sounds just outrageous saying it out loud now for the first time. But yeah, you basically are building these dungeons on burial sites. And
oh,
so,
okay, like a haunted might be burial ground?
Maybe, yeah, maybe there's a option to rename it, and I'm just blind and haven't seen it. But yeah, also, don't kill those little guys that are walking. They're there to guide you through the dungeon, and so many people come in and kill them, and then they're like lost.
Is there a leaderboard for like who has the most complex like dungeon?
I haven't seen that yet. I haven't seen any leaderboards or anything like that yet.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to see like the dungeon that has the most kills, but also the most upvotes or whatever. That seems like a fun thing to kind of track.
Yeah, and there's dungeons of different levels. Like this is the biggest variant and it's at the max like brutal difficulty. It goes to like minimum, dangerous, brutal. I had to do it like I don't know. I guess like a voice announcer.
How you pronounce it?
Brutal. But yeah, no, I'm having a blast with this one. It's a lot of fun. The only thing also I haven't noticed is I don't think there's a way to like grab a code for your dungeon and like share it like wide with people. Like if somebody's on your friends list, you can make your dungeon a social dungeon, which prevents it from decaying over time because these burial sites, you know, return to the earth apparently after 24 hours.
You were worried about this last time. Does it save your progress?
So yes. So what happens if you don't get enough points to prestige your dungeon and make it bigger and better, you have to spend resources to refill it and you lose all your prestige points down to that last level you prestige to. So like my dungeon's at level 3 right now. I haven't checked in a couple days. So if I didn't get enough points, I'll have to spend a bunch of resource and it'll reset to the beginning of level 3. And then I'll have to regain all the resources to get it.
It's a neat way of kind of making it competitive to just design stuff.
Like, yeah. I've seen some really cool stuff. I've seen like there's like this like staircase to heaven one where you had to go up this long staircase and there was like nothing there. And then you had to climb down. There's two different paths you could take and had different traps on each way. So you had to like really check your corners. Otherwise you got skewered or hit with arrows.
Yeah. Well, by the way, there's a good joke there, but I'm not going to go there. There's a stairway to heaven. There's nothing there.
It's true.
But yeah, this is on PlayStation Plus right now. Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see what people make of it. It's again one of those ones you got to kind of let out in the wild for it to really flourish. But that is the Dead by Daylight developers. So
yeah, there's a lot of Dead by Daylight like materials and stuff. You can like I've seen like wooden cabins built and stuff like that. Like all types of cool stuff.
They got to put Pyramid Head in the pyramid and then make him fight you or whatever. Just put Ash
in the pyramid.
Yeah. Anyway, Jada, you also played a bunch of games at GDC, which feels like a million years ago.
Oh my God, yes.
Down the road.
Yeah, we do. Okay, so I'm going to talk about the first one, which is I'm most excited for. It is called Checkmate Showdown. And this is basically chess mixed with a fighting game. So you will play chess against your opponents, and then anytime you are taking a piece that is not a pawn, it brings it in and you are duking it out one-on-one Street Fighter style. And one of the kickers to this is it has a Marvel versus Capcom assist kind of command to where if, say, you could take a piece with both your rook and your knight, you can call in an assist from the other piece mid-combo to like extend your combo and do more damage. Now the trick is as your piece takes damage, that damage is permanent. So even if you're like Max, you were using a knight to take my rook, but I win the fight, you lose your knight, but I keep my rook, but any damage you dealt to my rook my rook is now like at that. So if you did 50% of my health, I have 50% of health for the future fights with that piece. So like, even if you're really good at chess, and say you can get to somebody and like checkmate, get to their king and attack their king a bunch of times, like first, like it doesn't just end when you get checkmate like normal chess. You have to defeat the king. If that person whose king is on the defense is really good at fighting games, you may have to like checkmate them like three or four times, depending on how good you are or bad you are at fighting games.
That's such a funny mechanic for games. I really,
it's probably my favorite genre mashup of like strategy and fighting.
How does it fare in terms of like fighting game mechanics? Like, does it feel
good? It feels very good. It felt like, I think it was probably closest to like Mortal Kombat, I would say, for combat potential or combo potential. I'd say it's like that. There was, you know, a bunch of grabs. Looked like there were, I couldn't tell if there was command grabs. I only got to play it like one or two fights. Okay. But yeah, really, really enjoyed that one. Highly recommend checking it out. They're doing like their first like in-person like tourney for it up in Montreal this weekend, because that's where the developers are based out of. But yeah, definitely, if you know, check them out. Twitter and
stuff
like that.
Each chess piece has like their own moveset?
From what I could tell, yes.
What's the moveset of the Duke?
The Duke. There is no Duke in chess.
Man, there isn't?
Nope. That's why, you know, but there is a merchant piece in chess.
It's just called Checkmate?
Checkmate Showdown, I believe.
Checkmate Showdown, okay.
Yes. Another one I played is called Seeds of Yggdrasil. This one is kind of like a civilization roguelike, which is really cool. And so like you're kind of like building up you go to these missions and then you have to like imagine you're playing like Civ 5 or Civ 6 or whatever, and you're like expanding out in different areas, and you have to get enough workers to go and attack this area and stuff like that. And there's like a time limit and stuff like that. But as you get materials, you go back and you're rebuilding. This is the story. Like, if I remember right, this is the story after Ragnarok. So this is for like what's happening after that point. So that was a pretty cool one. I got a little bit of hands-on time with that one. Let's see what else. Pacific Drive. Mm. That's the big one. That one I got to do hands-on with this one. And boy, let me tell you, I was terrible at it.
I found that hard to believe.
I was really bad. I did not escape the zone once. I ran two runs and I died in both my runs. I was, you know, learning the controls, and they were like, hey, we can run you through the demo and, you know, they kind of handhold you. I was like, nah, I'm good. Just throw me in the deep end. That was a mistake. When you guys get a chance for the refresh,
this is like that. It's first person roguelite. Driving game?
So basically, you know, you have this car, you have this garage where you can upgrade your car, and you're basically driving into the center of the Pacific Northwest of this like storm area, trying to figure out some type of mystery. I didn't get to like really dive into any of the mystery and story stuff. I mostly got the gameplay stuff. But I lost so many car parts while out on the road. I had so many like creatures just attached to my car and then run away with like panels. At one point I lost the hood of my trunk, which was very bad because all my materials are back there. But yeah, and it's very much like survival-esque, so where you have to like kind of manage your durability of like your different tools and stuff, because certain tools will break while you're out on the go, and some of them you need in order to complete the trek to the next anchor of the trip. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait to get more time with it so I can actually sit down and like okay, now I know what I'm doing with this. But highly recommend it. When it drops, it's still in development.
It's slated for release sometime this year, and that's coming to PS5, so
yep.
We can get more on that. Was there anything
I'm really
else
interested
you,
in this
you
one.
Checked out that sticks? I love how also all these so far are the most unsearchable. Like if you Google Checkmate
Showdown,
or Seeds of Yggdrasil or Pacific Drive, you get like God of War Ragnarok walkthroughs, websites. And
so these are a lot of minus Pacific Drive. A lot of these ones I got to check. That, I mean, that's the beauty of GDC, is you get to play a lot of these games that aren't really. They're still early development. They're still like, they have a demo that's playable and stuff like that, but there's not a whole lot marketed and stuff yet, because it's not at that point yet. I guess the other one I would give a shout out to would be Protodroid Delta, which is like a three-dimensional Mega Man with a black female lead as the character. And it looks to be fantastic. I got a little bit of time with like the early level. And I really hope that that one gets kind of picked up and people check it out, because I think we need a new game in the Mega Man 3D space that we just haven't gotten a lot of yet.
That looks, is it? So it's not necessarily like Battle Network or something.
It's like
2D Mega Man in 3D, right?
Exactly. Yes. Yep. This is it. Yeah. So like, okay. Looks very cool. It's very stylish. It's not cyberpunk, but it's solar punk. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's very bright, colorful, futuristic look of like almost like utopia of the world, like, but there's still robots that you have to destroy. So
like a video game.
It looks like a video game, and that's the best thing. Like,
wonderful jumping lasers and whatnot.
We love video games. That's what we're here about. So,
Data, can you get different like upgrades and stuff for your suit, like different weapons, arm attachments? It seemed like there was like some stuff that implied that there in the.
Yeah, I believe so. I'd have to double check. But yeah, that one is right around the corner.
That one's 27th, and that's on a bunch of platforms.
Yep,
that's cool. That's great. Also, full disclosure, that's published by Humble Games, which is owned by IGN's parent company, Ziff Davis, and we're legally, we have to tell you that. They don't let us.
Thank you for remembering that, because I completely forgot that was a Humble product. I think the only other one that I will throw out, I played a bunch of games. There's from this this other publisher. One is called like Saga of Sins, it just came out. It's like a Castlevania, but stained glass art, and you can transform into I wish I had brought the box. I got this really cool box. Saga of Sins. I got this little box that says Saga of Sins, and I was carrying around a box of basically sins, which I was reinformed later that day. I was like, you can't call it that, Jada. I was like, oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Okay, I'm into this. This is a kind of like similar aesthetic to like Penitent, but a little,
yes,
yeah,
little more dark fantasy. Okay,
yeah. Mm-hmm. So I got to check this one out. It looks really cool. You're kind of going into like, it's got that Metroidvania element to it, to where as you get different upgrades, you'll have to go back into these other people that are possessed by these different demons. And, you know, to unlock more stuff and more power upgrades and things like that. So pretty cool. And the last one I will talk about is another game from the same, I believe it's coming under the same publishing company, but it's called Sklash. And if you are, yes, Sklash. And if you are a fan of games like Nidhogg or Joust, this one will be right up your alley. This one, it's just S-C-L-A-S-H, if you're looking it up. But yes, it is basically Nidhogg meets Joust with samurais.
I Googled this and I spelled it wrong, and it just gave me Google's results for Dr. Ron Sklash, cardiologist.
You should probably see him. That's Google telling you that.
Shout out to Dr. Ron Sklash.
But yeah, it's one hit kills, just like you expect in Nidhogg / Joust. I believe Joust was one hit kills, right? I don't remember. It's been so long. It's an older game. But anyways, but yeah. So like you have like, you can charge your attacks. Doesn't do any more damage because it's one hit kills anyways. But it can help with like delaying your attack. You can parry. You can dash back and forth. A lot of fun. Highly recommend that one as well.
It's got too much graphics. Nidhogg only has 1.5 colors, and that's the way games should be.
Got five graphics. Pixels. 5 pixels to Nidhogg.
God, I love Nidhogg. I want to play more of that.
But yeah, that's, I think, I'm sure there, I played so many games. Have a Nice Death, Five Nights at Freddy, Risk of Rain, League of Legends Mage Seeker, played so many Omega Strikers, so many great games at GDC. There's lots of good stuff, not necessarily from the AAA. So if you out there have a, like, you know, you're like looking for something to play until Star Wars comes out at the end of the month.
Yeah, Saga of Sins is actually out now, so that's, that's cool. And again, you know, it's nice to cover this kind of stuff because these games typically don't really have much in the way of a marketing budget. And, you know, we get some cool, you know, weird little indies in there.
I love me some indies.
Yeah. Brian, Akeem, is anything you guys are playing you want to talk about?
No.
No,
going back to Resident Evil 4.
I mean, okay. Yeah. I just got into No Man's Sky because of you two, Jada, Max. Got that for the PSVR too.
What's the VR experience like?
It's amazing. So there's the thing. I never played No Man's Sky. I kind of just like, you know, that game. I missed that game. It's amazing. It's phenomenal. It was. I'm glad you all recommended it. I chose the. I believe it was the narrative or the creative mode? I chose the creative mode. So I had no idea that it just kind of just drops you on a planet and you just gotta figure stuff out. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I recorded myself playing too with audio, and there's a lot of swearing going on because I was on this cold planet. I was like, what am I supposed to do? It's telling me like cold damage detected. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. This is confusing to me. And then I found my spaceship and I flew off to
a hot planet. He just said PlayStation world, right? Cold and hot.
Well, maybe it might be. Yeah, it was a pretty hot planet, as in like sexy, because it looked like the Death Star. Okay. I met other players there, and they helped me. Yeah, it's hot, means sexy, right? Yeah, that's what Will Smith always says.
But anyway, I'm playing sexy. This. I'm confused.
Heck yeah!
Is it not
just like look, the power of that laser?
Okay.
Yeah, it's got sexy. Little hole that Imperial you fly into.
All the way.
All the beautiful men working on there, like Tarkin.
So No Man's Sky, this is a game.
It's beautiful. It's fully immersive. You know, you land on these planets, and you can befriend like those weird looking creatures. Not those ones. The ones that we're looking at now on the screen, and they can follow you as companions. And I just love that there's a community in this game. You know, I landed in this spot where we were just looking at the Death Star area, and I was talking to myself, trying to figure out what the hell do I need to do. I didn't know that other players could talk to you. They're like, hey, I don't know what to do either. Oh, cool.
Wait, so like, you actually ran into other people like while you're playing it? Oh, that's cool.
Right,
I remember when it first dropped, and like, it was like a disaster at the first launch, and they've rebuilt it as time has progressed. But like, people were like, how do we find other people? Like, it's multiplayer,
well,
but like
there's so many planets you'll never run it.
Yeah,
and people found the same planet, they weren't on it, and they were like, what gives? And then people were mad at that game. But yeah, no, Akeem, you are getting the best possible experience for this. Yes. Where like they have spent so much time just working on this game, and like, you know, big capital F word over the response this got when it launched, because that was really embarrassing and gross. But it's cool to see that you know, Hello Games has like kept at it and just kept building on this game, and obviously like the money they've made from it, they've put back into it.
I will say this, they still have a little bit of work to do, because the game actually crashed on me like 3 times while I was playing.
Interesting.
So yeah,
was the game crashing, or you crashing while piloting your ship?
No, I never crashed. I never crashed, Jade. I know what I'm doing
I know that they're
in that cockpit.
They're still tweaking the PSVR 2 stuff. I saw some people kind of complaining about that. But again, like at this point, if they're like, we're working on it, I think you can kind of trust them.
Absolutely.
We've had plenty to talk about today. This was a ton of fun. All of you, thank you for joining me and talk about Resident Evil 4. The game that has the merchant, the best character in video games
ever.
Period.
Lies.
And
lies.
That's all the
lies.
Time we have for. So thank you all for joining us, and thank you to Capcom for creating the merchant, the best
the
character
Duke.
In
the
fiction.
The Duke is
period.
The biggest
Several
guy
thank you
and
for watching
the greatest
and
guy
beyond.
Both great merchants. We can high five.
Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before, because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.